it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to New Horizons, the weekly program from Blind Citizens Australia. I'm Vaughan Bennison. We spoke some months ago with Ricky Chaplin, Advocacy Officer with Blind Citizens Australia, about different things that were happening in and around the community. He joins us again on today's program. Ricky Chaplin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Vaughan. Great to be here again.
Last time we spoke, we talked about a number of different issues, but among them was the taxi transport subsidy, particularly in states where the NDIS was rolling out at that time. We're now looking at a national NDIS rollout. Have we got any more news on the taxi transport cards across the country?
About the only one that I know of is Queensland. Now, the scheme in Queensland was due to end in June. The latest I've heard on that is apparently that it's going to be under review rather than the scheme just being cut off immediately. In fact, I was just talking to a good friend of ours, Steve Richardson, the other day about this, and he has written a letter which will go to the Transport Minister on behalf of the Brisbane branch of BCA, arguing for its continuation. And I guess the premise of those arguments is that they're reliant on that TSS scheme to top up, if you like, what they receive through the NDIS. So it's going to impact on people's ability to participate in community activities and even employment to some degree. Also, it's going to have a big impact on the taxi industry. So anecdotally, we estimate that around 20% of all fares are taken, at least in Queensland, come from people with TSS cards. So once those cards are phased out, if that happens, the taxi industry could be quite heavily impacted. And again, that's going to have economic flow-on effects for Queensland's economy. So, we've tried to make it as practical as possible, given that most things are considered from an economic perspective by governments in terms of, you know, pointing out to them what the impacts could be. So hopefully they do take some notice and we get a favourable outcome. But at this point, we really don't know exactly what's going to happen. We know Victoria is going to keep their scheme. I'm not sure about New South Wales. But, it seems that other states are taking different approaches to it. So there's no uniform approach by all the states to this issue, unfortunately. Of course, again, the subsidy levels vary between states. So in Victoria, you've got a $60 subsidy. In Queensland, you've only got $25.
In terms of the National Disability Insurance Scheme, we spoke some months ago with Vicky Rundle, Deputy CEO of the NDIA, and as part of that discussion, we talked about adaptive technology purchasing and some of the issues that surround that. Has there been any more on that?
Not officially. However, I would like to talk about the issue of how the occupational therapist reports are worded. We know that a lot of people have had their adaptive technology requests rejected because the wording in the reports hasn't been sufficient to convince the NDIA that people really do need this technology. So I spoke to somebody totally unrelated, actually, regarding an entirely different issue. However, she did give me a bit of an insight into the kind of wording that is needed in this report, which is really good because it's something I've been looking for a long time. What a report like this really needs to say is that so-and-so really needs this device, this piece of technology, in order to function. Otherwise, that they will be prevented from performing certain tasks, which most of us take for granted. It can't just say something like so-and-so would benefit from this piece of technology, because that it makes it appear to people making the final decision that it's not absolutely necessary, that, you know, it would be nice sort of thing, but, you know, you could live without it. Mm-hmm. What we've got to do is make the impression that it's an essential item, that, you know, a person can't do without it, that they really need it to be able to do, you know, even the most the basic everyday tasks. You know, a lot of us tend to lose sight of that that criteria, reasonable and necessary. And we think it's a bit of bureaucratic speak, but they are very much applying it, you know, at a practical level. And it really does take time to learn how to prove that something is reasonable and necessary. It's not a way of communicating that we naturally default to as human beings.
That's absolutely right. And I think the other thing that we need to remember is that that has to be applied to the goals and the outcomes that are listed within your NDIS plan. So, for example, if one of your goals is to communicate with friends, in order to do that, you need to be facilitated and have the appropriate technology to do that. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to complete that goal.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, one of the things that one of the working groups that I've been involved in is a working group set up by the Australian Blindness Forum around standards that assesses for assistive technology need to meet. And so, of course, one of these standards will be around the structuring of these reports, how they're written, the amount of detail they go into. And also the qualifications that assistive technology assessors need to have. So I think once we get that sorted, it's going to take some time yet, but hopefully once we get that organized, we will get some better outcomes for people. I had heard that they were going to make it so that you would be able to purchase a piece of technology under the value of $1,500 without there needing to be an assessment. Last I heard, that was still being piloted, so that hadn't been implemented in full. So hopefully that'll happen. And once it does, I think, you know, at least we'll have some relief from this issue. Things like talking microwaves, for example, which you're looking at around $800, something like that, people will be able to obtain those a lot more easily. It's interesting that a lot of these lower cost items have features that, as you say, most people have taken for granted for so many years. So I just got a dot watch, for example, which is one of these new smart braille watches. For the first time ever, I've got a built-in timer which shows up in braille on that watch. It is so handy for different things, you know, cooking, brewing coffee, for example. It's got a stopwatch on it. So if I wanted to exercise, for example, I could time how long that I've been have exercised before I need a break. All of those things that, you know, sighted people have been able to do for so long. And, you know, the fact that I can see it there on a braille display, it's just revolutionized a lot of what I do. It's, you know, and it's a relatively low-cost item. It costs around $400-something Australian.
When you say relatively low cost, though, of course, from the NDIA's perspective, that needs to be compared with the equivalent digital watch that a sighted person would purchase for about $16.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, you know, the cost of braille displays even though this one's a 4-cell braille display, but, you know, they are quite expensive to manufacture. And again, you know, I suppose you've still got to prove to a certain point, if you undergo an assessment for this, that, you know, that it is a reasonable and necessary item. The way that I did it was to purchase it out of my consumables budget. So, you know, I figure that I would certainly be able to demonstrate why it was necessary to purchase this this piece of equipment, and how much it's improved my quality of life, for example. So I think as long as you can demonstrate why you've bought something, because, of course, you're not asked directly for invoices. If you're self-managing, that is, I need to make that clear. It's a lot easier if you're self-managing to purchase things like this. But, you know, as long as you're clear on why you've purchased it and, you know, how it's actually working for you, then you shouldn't have any problem.
As you say, quality of life is really important, as is independence. And it's the subject of a session that you're running at the upcoming BCA convention. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. Now, this all started from a Facebook post that I shared. And the content of that post was along the lines of asking blind people not to be so judgmental towards each other in terms of whether you know, our peers can perform certain tasks independently, whether they choose to get assistance for those tasks, all that kind of thing. And, you know, I think it's something that we've all dealt with as people who are blind or vision impaired most of our lives. You know, we've had comments made about, oh, you should be able to do that without any problem. But the reality is that all of us have different needs, sometimes additional disabilities. And it really comes down to, well, how do you define independence? Is it being able to perform those tasks, every little thing independently, or is it making the decision about how you get that task accomplished? It's something I've been really passionate about for a lot of years because, you know, I know that there are people who can do lots of things that I am not able to do. So, you know, and certainly I've looked at those people and gone, oh, my God, you know, they're so much better than I am as a blind person. But that's not really the case. It's just that, you know, as any sighted person would have differences in what they're able to do, so do we as people who are blind. And I think we place a lot of pressure on ourselves to appear to the rest of the world as though we're competent. And I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be able to accomplish as much as we can independently without requiring assistance, in a sense to prove that we do have that level of competence. And yet that can backfire as well, because it can reduce the trust that, you know, can exist between people who are blind. And I think one of the other things that really stood out to me, judging by the comments that emanated from that original post, was just how much we attribute to blindness. Just because we can't do something or we choose to do it in a certain way is not because we are blind. It's because we are all unique. We all have different characteristics, and we all feel comfortable with a different approach to achieving things. So why isn't that acceptable when, for a person without a disability, they would never be questioned about that? They'd never think twice about it. I've said for a long time, if we want acceptance by the sighted community, so to speak, then we'd better clean up our own backyard. You know, we'd better not criticize each other for different things that, you know, a person can't do or whatever, because we need to rely on each other and to have that trust in each other so that we can learn from each other. And another thing that I've said over the years is there's nothing like blind people teaching blind people. But if you don't have that level of trust between blind people in the first place, then you lose that opportunity for someone to be able to feel comfortable in learning those skills.
Perhaps remind us when the convention's on.
So, yeah, the convention is from March 29 through to April 1st. Now, April 1st is going to be a day of sightseeing, I believe, and there's still to be activities organised around that. So we've got workshops on the 29th, and that's when this particular workshop will occur. Then we have the Saturday and Sunday, which is the full program across those days. We've got the convention dinner on the Saturday night, and we've got a barbecue dinner on the Sunday night, which should be a lot of fun, should be fairly informal. So, yeah, really looking forward to that.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Vaughan. Great to be here.
Ricky Chaplin there, Advocacy Officer with Blind Citizens Australia. Don't forget that registrations for the convention are due shortly, so make sure you get your registration in. And if you're interested in participating in any of the sightseeing activities, which will be advised fairly shortly, then make sure you let Blind Citizens Australia know. I'm Vaughan Bennison. If you'd like to get in touch with Blind Citizens Australia, contact them on 1-800-033-660, 1-800-033-660, or bca@bca.org.au. And while I think about it, if you have any nominations for the David Blyth Award, the Diana Braun Aspirations Award, or Certificates of Appreciation, remember that they're due in by this week. So make sure you get your nominations in there. I'll talk to you again next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams, of our dreams.